It's like part of a series, which I didn't realize. Like, they didn't just put out this one about skill-based matchmaking. They put out other ones too, like how they like prioritize ping and stuff. And there's an entire article about how they do ranked matchmaking, which seems interesting.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't so have like
there are multiple episodes here, is what you're telling me.
If we wanted to, we could go deep on white papers. That could be the next
I think that
thing.
Maybe is our niche, actually, if we're being honest.
Yes, a little bit.
An overly critical lens on silly things is kind of the brand.
Yes. Yeah. The matchmaking series. We do a deep read of the Call of Duty white papers from 2024.
Yeah. Yeah. That would probably do all right.
Yeah, but imagine the comment section, you know? Like, how bad does that get?
You just do what I do and ignore it. Yeah.
No,
it's
that's
great.
Fair. That's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah, man. The internet's not a useful thing to interact with in that way anymore. They've gone down, ruined it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
yeah. That is a thing I will be bringing up in our magic discussion. We should do this fucking episode.
Yeah, okay, let's do it.
We're gonna forget. It's gonna be 10:30. And we're gonna have another pile of of this
wiki griping.
Yeah. I'm still mad about that.
Yeah, me too. Hello and welcome to the 70% Complete Podcast. It's a show where the topic is the tangent. Today's tangent. We're talking about Call of Duty. That hot new Battlefield dropped, and Call of Duty Black Ops 7. Is it 7 now?
I hate that.
that one's coming out soon, I think. We thought. Yeah, Blop 7. What were you just playing mere hours ago?
Oh, like half an hour ago, I was playing Black Ops 1.
Oh, the first one. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. From... Went 15-3 on Havana before I quit, by the way. It only took me 2 games to figure out how to play it again.
Perfect. Well, that's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about Call of Duty first-person shooters, and I guess this is your first jump scare of the Halloween season podcast we're doing. We're going to talk about skill-based matchmaking.
Yeah. And like my maladaptive degeneracy with Black Ops 1.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we all have one. And I feel like, unfortunately, the one that people are having is slipping further and further towards the present day. And that's scary. It doesn't make me feel good.
So I did some brief poking around on my lunch break on the old interwebs, which was tough because most of them were down today. Peek behind the curtain there, I guess, on when we record these. And I was like,
happy,
I wonder,
AWS outage day, folks.
Yeah, like, I wonder what people's first Call of Duty is. Like, what's the mode first Call of Duty now? What's the most frequent one? Because that has to have shifted dramatically over time.
Yeah. I mean, did you run into the problem where they're all named the same thing, so it's impossible to know anyone's?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's that, but I spent long enough in retail that you kind of learn how to parse those.
Sure.
So the first gut punch was someone saying that they played, I think it was World at War was their first Call of Duty, and they were able to play that on their dad's Xbox 360.
Woof.
Okay, yep. I was like, oh, that's how I introduced, how I was introduced to first-person shooters, through my dad's copy of Nintendo 64 GoldenEye.
Yeah.
So, like, that's a bit of a jump. And then the ones that, like, really, really kind of polished me off and made me crash Reddit for the day were the people who started playing with Call of Duty Mobile.
Yeah, so that was going to be my guess, was either Mobile or Warzone.
Yeah, and everyone that was like, hey, I started with Mobile, that is a pile of trash.
Yeah. I'm surprised they made it out.
Yeah.
Before we get into the big conversation here, do you want to give a brief overview, I guess, of what your first Call of Duty was? And then we can kind of tiptoe into the split here.
Was Finest Hour? Was that them?
My
old-ass Call of Duty knowledge gets scrunched up with the Medal of Honor games back in the day, since those were, that was like the bigger franchise in my mind for
correct.
A while.
And then, Finest Hour is indeed okay. a Call of Duty.
That feels like a thing I played on PlayStation 2.
It is the first installment on console.
Okay.
Yes, PS2 game.
Yeah, I've played some Call of Duty.
Maybe a better question. Which ones haven't you played? Mm-hmm.
So I fell off. I got real intermittent after Ghosts. Ghosts was the first one I didn't buy day and date. I actually haven't really touched it at all. I think I accidentally played a few rounds somewhere once. So Black Ops 1, 2, was Ghosts right after 2? Modern Warfare 2 was in between those two Black Ops. So all of those I threw a ton of time into.
Ghosts was after Blops 2.
Yep. Okay. That sounds right. So yeah, Ghosts I didn't touch because of fatigue and how bad it was.
Ghosts is my white whale. I continue to check and see if that game is ever playable because I need to know about orbital tungsten rounds.
Dan Olson finally got his video out on that one. So,
oh yeah, I watched
not the
it.
PAX talk, the actual, okay.
Yeah, I devoured that one.
I
it's a good Folded Ideas video about orbital tungsten rods.
What else did I play? Four? Black Ops 4? Maybe I got into?
Yeah, I guess there is four of them, huh?
If there's seven, there's, let me...
That is how it goes. Although technically there isn't a five, it's just Cold War.
That one I did not play. I feel like I played a fair bit of four. Let me look at the... Yes, I got into four a bit. That's when DMZ hit as well. Yeah, so... and there was another another Infinity Ward one I messed around with for a month or two.
So when we started playing Call of Duty again, it was Modern Warfare mm-hmm. 2, right? The new one?
That feels right.
I think that's right.
This is what we get for doing these from the hip.
Yeah. And then we skipped after that, because you played a little bit of Modern Warfare 3.
Yeah. 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 And like, okay. I was in on Black Ops 1 and 2. Like,
yeah,
I paid them a monthly subscription to whatever the pro version was, where you got extra stats, and I had like a freaking membership card in my wallet as a legal adult.
I didn't know that they were doing that early. That's crazy.
Yeah, that would have been Modern Warfare 3, whatever came out after Black Ops. Boy, they made these impossible, didn't they?
Yeah, it truly, it's inscrutable to look at this list.
It is impossible to look at because of the way that they've named these things. Very Apple-like solution that they took.
Yeah,
here.
Truly.
Okay, so 2, 3, Modern Warfare. Okay, so I did play 4. I played that primarily offline, though. I got to that one after it was popular.
And that was too late for you?
Yeah, and that one was on PC I was doing. That one I was playing on Moat Beast, which I'm going to try to resurrect later this week.
Ugh. Moat Beast.
Black Ops 1, I played a ton. Modern Warfare 3, I played a ton. Black Ops 2, I played a ton. Ghosts, I skipped. Advanced Warfare, I skipped. I played Black Ops 3. Infinite War, I skipped. World War 2, I skipped. I played Black Ops 4. And then the new Modern Warfare 2, 2022's Modern Warfare 2.
Okay. Okay.
Then,
so
yeah, touched 3 for like a week or something.
Okay, so you kind of fell off towards the latter half here. Like, you really peaked in Black Ops 1, and then all kind of went down from there. Interesting.
I've done most of the Treyarch games. All of them but Cold War.
I remember as a teenager yelling about Treyarch and map designs.
Yeah, three lanes.
Yeah, three lanes.
We're going to talk about three lanes later.
Yeah, we will talk about three lanes later. Yeah, that's interesting. So I think I also started with the first game. Yeah, this is the one that starts with the American, British, and Soviet campaigns. Yeah, so I have also played all of these. I fell off. I played 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
I played 1, 2, and 3, and then after that,
You played World at War.
Did I play World at War?
You did, because we played it in your mom's basement. I'm just remembering this now. We rented that one weekend.
Yeah, so I was going to say that the only other engagement I had with these, so I think I played Modern Warfare 1, but only the Spec Ops missions, right? Mm-hmm. That was the one that had the Spec Ops missions?
Yeah, I think we did that for a weekend, too.
Yeah, Yeah. So we did that because then I remember that when one of them came out, it didn't have them. And then I just didn't play any more Call of Duty.
Yeah. So that was Infinity War did the Spec Ops missions. Treyarch did zombies.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
And then you had your difference between like the slide and the dolphin dive was the other big split.
Yes. 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 And then for Black Ops, like that was like peak degeneracy for me. Like that was the game that you and I would like see Dawn playing on Xbox 360.
Yeah. And that's when I was bad at that game still. I don't think I got like good at that game until after you stopped playing.
That's probably true. And that's which like
sounds
probably,
like you were holding me back, but I don't think that was
I mean this is probably a little bit of the case. Also it's probably when you got off the game fuel, you know. I suspect that probably had that was not a performance.
Hey, I don't know if that helps or hurts. I mean, okay, let me phrase that. It hurts, but I don't know if it makes you a better Call of Duty player or not. Yeah. It does hurt though. It physically damages you.
It just actually does that.
They still sell that, right?
Well, yes and no. It's an energy drink now, unfortunately.
Oh, is it? So, like, not the same formulation?
No.
Even?
No.
Oh, man. I saved a 12 of that for an unfortunate amount of time.
A dangerous amount of time?
Yeah. Ugh. Gross.
Did that have Halo 3 Master Chief on it, or was it Call of Duty flavored?
It was Black Ops 2. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Man, there's a lot of things about 2010 that were bad, but also what a beautiful time to be alive.
Yeah. I'm still advocating that like we hit peak consumer electronics around then, and it's just been downhill ever since then, like as a holistic measurement.
I think I agree with that. Yeah, okay. So
everything past the iPhone 6S wasn't needed.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the 5 was peak design. It was so good that they went back to it. So, you know, agreed.
Yeah.
I guess we've played our fair share of Call of Duty. Also, we are older Call of Duty people. The first one, man, 2003 being the first one. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Also, Warzone is not listed on this list. So that's fun. So that doesn't count as main series Call of Duty.
No.
Which is good.
That came out with
2020, it appears.
Okay, I was gonna say 2019 Modern Warfare, but maybe it launched in 2020 after that. I
thought Mobile it was 2019.
Okay.
Oof. Call of Duty Warzone was released on March 10th, 2020.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought.
Okay. So there's a lot of grade school kids that were skipping class, skipping Zoom school to play Call of Duty Warzone.
Yeah. I did a little bit of Warzone, but had. I was like deep into PUBG at that point. So,
oh, yeah.
Getting the arcade version of that was not what I was looking for.
Yeah. You wanted that Eastern European shit right into the veins.
Yeah. 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 We'll get there. Don't worry. we'll get there.
We'll get there. So, I guess like the big topic here, or I guess mini topic number one, is skill based matchmaking. And kind of within the frame of all of this, I'm trying to look back, and I think that the first skill based matchmaking game is Black Ops 2. Is that correct? I have when they started tracking
that feels
data.
Possible. I would believe that. It's not Black Ops 1. I feel pretty confident.
No, it's
saying
not.
That.
I am because
that thing had like anti skill based matchmaking at times. It felt like some real unfair lobbies that would throw you into in both directions. I would guess Black Ops 2. I mean, they probably didn't have the online player base for it until around that time. Maybe Modern Warfare 3.
It appears that Modern Warfare 2019 is the first one where they have like actually updated. So I guess there's a couple of things to get into here. And the first is that Modern Warfare in 2007 is the first that has like some type of skill-based matchmaking, but it's like loose. And then it becomes much more intense as Call of Duty goes on, as they like build the data. And it seems like 2019 Modern Warfare reboot is when they like really started using it and testing it. And that's partly because, you know, 2019, you have all of these boxes that are able to function a lot faster. They're able to pick up all of this data and run the the algorithms like much quicker. The crazy thing in this white paper is that they are doing searches every 5 seconds, and it is doing like millions of searches in those 5 seconds. It's just like constantly refreshing and like hitting the servers to like try to ping everyone's server, ping everyone's searches to matchmake. So
yeah, matchmaking is a nightmare problem.
Yeah. Yeah. The paper gets into it a little bit, but it is like obnoxious when you start to think about, you know, having to manage matchmaking for just, you know, however many individuals are doing it. And then you layer in partied up people, and then you layer in all of the aspects of like ping, like they prioritize geographic ping. And then on top of that, you layer on like mouse and keyboard versus console. And then like, it just keeps going on and on. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You keep slicing that pie thinner and thinner, and you just need a large player base to support that. Once that corner turns and it starts to shrink, it'll be interesting to see how they adapt to that.
Yes.
Call of Duty can't continue to get bigger forever, because that's how forever works.
Yes. The entropy comes for us all.
Yeah.
And so the skill-based matchmaking is like a discussion, because I think I shared this with you, and I don't have the statement handy, but basically what they said with Black Ops 7 is that they are unwinding some of their skill-based matchmaking in an incredibly couched kind of way. And I'm trying to pull it up right now, but it is like one of the most, we're going to give you exactly what you want, but we're not going to commit to say how long.
Yeah, I think you pointed out to me at the time of just like, oh, they don't have the seed data they need for this. So like they probably start off every time and that shit gets turned on 30 to 60 days into it or whatever. So yeah, it's not hard to just say, oh yeah, we're launching with no skill-based matchmaking. And then they'll turn it on, and they'll probably turn it off for a week just to make sure the line goes down, and then they'll turn it back on again.
Yep. Yeah, so the statement here is that for Black Ops 7, I'll just read this. It says, we know the big question on everyone's mind coming out of the beta is, how will matchmaking work in Black Ops 7? At launch, open matchmaking will with minimal skill consideration will be the default for Black Ops 7 multiplayer. Simply put, imagine the matchmaking experience of Open Mosh Pit from the beta, but as the standard in Black Ops 7 on day one. And so there's a lot of couch language in there. There's that little at launch bit, and then there's that little on day one bit. So, you know.
And minimal.
Yes, minimal also.
Yeah. All of those words can be defined in interesting ways.
Yes. Yeah, and they kind of go into some of the stuff in the white paper that the Activision put out on what they, you know, what skill-based matchmaking is, how they determine it, how it works, and why they've decided to go with it. So when this announcement for Black Ops 7 came out and they like put out this post of like, hey, we're giving you exactly what you want, I finally decided that I was going to read this goddamn white paper and see like, okay, well, wait a minute. Why did they go back on this thing if they seemed to be pretty okay with how it was going? And so this paper is from, it looks like 2024. It's part of a larger series about matchmaking. It has everything in there about like how they prioritize and determine like ping speeds, the time to match, how they deal with voice chat, input devices, the diversity of playlists, what platform people are playing on, and the one that I read today, which is about skill and performance in the match and how that is used to determine where you will kind of slot in. This like hidden skill number. That everyone who specifically streams and yells about Call of Duty on the internet is so mad about. And it is those people, I think, is like kind of the big takeaway here.
Yeah,
is that
the internet got loud about it.
Yeah, this is very much a vocal minority. And the fun thing about it is just like Activision has the receipts on why they chose to make this decision. And like, you know, it's a corporate white paper put out by the corporation, so, you know, take it with a grain of salt and everything, but I certainly trust the company that has profit motives to keep you playing the game to have a good idea of how to have it be fun than the people on the internet who just want to do 360 no-scopes on a bunch of people and ruin some afternoons.
Yeah, I mean, Activision are, without a doubt, a bunch of damn liars.
Yeah.
But they're not incentivized to lie about this. It's the exact opposite of that.
Yes.
They're de-incentivized to lie about this. So I'm willing to give them a little bit of rope on this topic particularly.
I have a couple of highlights here. I think I've given you a lot of the sneaky pre-episode surprise announcements about this whole thing, which is basically to like, surprise, they figured out skill-based matchmaking and it actually is the thing that they went with because it prioritizes players staying and having fun, and that will all over just create a more healthy game that stays alive more and has quicker time to match because there are more people playing it because less people are leaving. The thing that was truly surprising to me about it, though, is the data behind it and how absolutely shocking it is that this is not even a question. Like, they have tested it since 2019, and over again, the like thing that they have taken away from this is that like within 2 weeks, the negative effects of turning down, not even turning off, skill-based matchmaking have been seen, which is magical.
Yeah. I mean, I'll probably nitpick a little bit that maybe retention rate and fun are not quite equivalent, but they're at least in the same quadrant.
Yeah. They do a lot of equating in like they basically come out and say, like, we don't know, like, we don't have a single fun metric, but we are correlating, like, you know, amount of matches or like amount of matches that you don't quit out of or amount of blowouts that happen as like, you know, being positive or negative indicators of fun being had. But yeah, I will give you a little bit there.
And as with all pieces of software you interact with from any of these companies, their goal isn't for you to have fun. It's for you to interact with it forever and exclusively.
Yeah.
Which having fun is a great way to have that happen, but it's not the only lever to pull. I will not say that like my most my deepest, darkest Black Ops holes were not the most fun times that I was having with that game typically.
They were not fueled by fun?
Not always. Sometimes, but not always. We'll get there.
So let's talk a little bit about that. There's one very large vagary in this entire white paper that is really funny to me. So I will give you their like technical definition of, or I guess technical criteria of what skill, like quote unquote skill, should be. Which
is
interesting.
Stuff I'm excited for. Because I bet I have a different conception of the way I'm going to talk about skill and Call of Duty.
Yes, and I will caveat this ahead of time. I'm going to tell you a lot about the number that they provide. I am not going to tell you what the actual criteria are because they don't provide them. They simply tell me some seemingly sufficient performance metrics that have downsides.
Okay. As long as they're measuring them consistently, then they're at least comparable to themselves.
Yes. So the first criteria here is that the skill should be a thing that is constrained between two numbers so that you can, you know, reasonably place someone within, you know, a number line, basically.
Okay.
You should be able to analyze them against one another. Pretty easy. It should be highly predictive. They don't want to base it on a single metric, but if they do base it on a series of metrics, it should be a reliable predictor of how you will perform in the future as well. This is the third point here, which is, I think, in the algorithm section, I will not be touching on, but that it should be summable so that each of the average skills of every multiplayer player is predictive and that they can be additive to determine and like predict how well a team is balanced. So
okay,
we like if you are a 5 and I am a 2, together we are a 7, and that should be equivalent to a 3 and a 4, possibly.
Okay. Oh, the math on that gets complicated. We're doing derivative stuff. Okay.
It gets pretty intense pretty quickly.
Yep. Okay. Maybe I'll look at some of those algorithms if there is interest in that, because
I might be able to take a crack at it, but it's probably beyond me as well.
They lay them out pretty simply, but it is in the simple kind of way that belies greater depth. The next one is that the skill number, the skill value, should be capable of adapting to a player's ever-changing performance, and specifically quickly. So we'll get into this in a little bit, but the way that this works is that after every match, for like a TDM match, you are assigned a skill number. And that skill number is in relation to the other people on your team as well as the opponents. And they're all relative to one another. So your skill number will kind of go up and go down as you continue to play. And then there is kind of like a player level aggregated skill number that is, you know, moving up and down as well, but smaller just based on past performance.
I'm surprised it updates that quickly. I guess not. Okay. Yeah. No, never mind. I'll hold that. We're good.
Okay. And then the other thing is that obviously this data should be resilient. The skill distribution should remain accurate in all situations. You know, influx of new players, shift, deflate, inflate, or even collapse when, you know, exposed to population change. They want to avoid that, which makes a lot of sense.
I cannot imagine getting this brief. Is this is a big ask.
Yeah.
Like, well, and I mean, we just want a system that's entirely extensible and like infinitely self-referential and works all the time forever, both in the like immediate term and in perpetuity.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's kind of like when you think about this having its fever pitch moment around the re-release of Modern Warfare. I think that's why, like, there's like a ton of factors involved there, right? Like, you have, you know, this rising class of people who only play Call of Duty online. There's like a much bigger, like, spectator class around then, like, watching this stuff happen in clips. Like, you have the rise of TikTok, like, all of this stuff where everyone is now able to do frame by frames of everything.
Twitch. Yeah. Like, yeah. Playing Black Ops 1, it didn't even occur to me to look at like the broader internet for suggestions on how to be better at. I don't even know how active Twitch was at that time.
It had just come out, I think. Okay. Like 2010, yeah. It came out around the same time, 2010, 2011, I think.
Yeah.
But now, like, there's an entire cottage industry of people who all they do is play and complain about Call of Duty. So now you have like that vocal minority who's out there saying stuff and also are collecting, like, you know, an incredible corpus of data on how this is going, and like they are doing the thing that perhaps you do internally, but they are vocalizing it. So now there are hundreds of thousands of people whose experience of Call of Duty is watching it happen and then having it analyzed ahead of them, but, you know, through the lens of a toxic Call of Duty gamer.
yeah.
So there's a couple of other stuff here, and I guess the first one is that they kind of have a hierarchy here. Like I said before, they're going to always prioritize ping in matchmaking. So almost never will you wait longer to have a match that is more, you know, attuned to your skill, which I guess makes sense. The other stuff here is player progression. So how far you are in unlocking all of the weapons, how long you have played the game. None of those things are involved in skill like that. Those are not factors that go into your skill number. It is simply like literally the raw. I mean, there is not a variable that says this person has played 73 hours of Call of Duty and therefore match them with other people who have played the same. But Yes.
Well, I'm whining more about the unlocks, but yes.
Sure. Yeah.
That number gets represented through match performance.
Yes.
As opposed to a breakout thing. Because just because someone has a better thing unlocked doesn't mean that they're better with that thing.
Correct. Yes.
But if they are, then that still ends up being represented.
Like, you could be an absolute monster with M16 iron sights on firing range. And, you know, just because I have all of the other fun stuff doesn't mean that I'm better than you.
The person I played with primarily in Black Ops 1 used the M16 constantly on Nuketown and did an M16 ACOG on Nuketown and did absolutely gross things with it. So
it's terrible.
You can, yeah.
So they go into some of the metrics too. So this is the, these are the metrics that have considerable downsides. So we can kind of see their logic in choosing a metric, but like I said, they do not explain what that metric is. We'll kind of tick down these so you can kind of see the logic here, but the first metric they provide for a TDM match to determine skill is match total kills. Can you think of the pitfall for matchmaking me against people who have the same match total kills?
No, I can't.
So if I have 10 kills and you have 10 kills, but I have 20 deaths and you have one.
Oh, if we're exclusively looking at kills. Sorry.
Yes.
Yes.
Only kills.
I had already translated that into like match performance in my head. Yeah. If you're only looking at kills, that seems like an entirely useless number.
Yes.
Or a relatively useless number, depending on the game type.
Yeah. Yeah. So in TDM, it doesn't reflect the player's ability to survive. It is only reflecting their ability to, you know, get a couple kills.
Yeah.
You know, in TDM, it's important that you also don't get killed as much also.
Right. I would imagine that's a rough stand-in for expected match length. If you're pairing up people who typically get X number of kills per game, you could jigsaw that in a way to manipulate the average match length over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. It with the goal of prioritizing faster and more matches?
I would say there's probably a parabolic nature to that. I would guess you don't want a game that ends faster than it took to load in, because that's exhausting.
Yep.
But you typically don't want them going to time either. That usually means something else went wrong, especially on TDM. I would guess probably like a 6 to 10 minute mark is probably a target that I would start aiming at just to see what the data looked like.
Yeah.
Because like there were times at my like most degenerate in Black Ops where my friend and I would get, you know, 60 of the 75 kills between the two of us in a TDM match, and that would end quickly. So yeah. if you put, you know, five people who averaged 40 kills out of the 75 in a TDM match and you put them all on the same team, that game's not going to go long, even if they typically have a low KDR.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's also the balancing part too, right? Like, it's the thing that they kind of talk about in the paper is it's not that they're trying to, like, if everyone's skill goes from 1 to 10, they're not trying to put only ones together. It's a, like, smattering, and it kind of has, like, this is the algorithmic stuff. But basically, they want to have a good mix of 3s, 4s, and 5s together, but prioritizing that they need to have match speed. And then fold in all of those factors I mentioned earlier about, you know, console versus keyboard or having like parties, because there's also a whole separate thing here of parties. So like when you, Nick, and I play, if we are, you know, 1 to 10, I would say that you are probably closer to a 7 or 8 in a lot of these matches, while Nick and I are probably much closer to 2 to 3 most points. So then prioritizing like how to fit us with other groups just really throws off the math. And then you have to basically fit with other parties that are the same. And then you get into all the nonsense of like 6-person parties on a, you know, 6v6 map. It gets obnoxious pretty quick.
Do you know if they are categorizing playstyle as well? Because I would assume you would not want a team exclusively of passive players and a team exclusively of run and gun sort of folks at the same time.
Good question. They don't go into it in this at all. This is like so specific to that, you know, 0.1 to 1.0 percentile that you fall within. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But that is a good call out. Yeah. Let's see. The next metric here, you mentioned the kill death ratio, the KDR. Do you have a good idea of why a KDR is not a good metric for a TDM skill value?
I mean, velocity would be my thought. It's like 15 and 3 is different than 45 and 15.
That's a good idea. They are much
not on
more
the board though.
Not on the board, no. They talk about self kills. So basically you could have a positive, like a really positive KD, but you can artificially drop. Listen, you need to remember that this paper is written
for
smurf
KDR. Yeah. Yeah, which people. But that wouldn't stop me from using KDR. That would stop me. I would exclude people who have obviously smurfed KDRs from my SBMM calculation. So, like, back to Black Ops 1, because that's what I'm going to do this entire thing. If you could look up the leaderboards, like, on a weekly basis for a time scale, and there would be people with, like, I don't know, 876 kills and 3 deaths.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, that person's, like, not playing the game. They're doing something else. They're doing a different thing, and we're here for it. So, like, those things stand out. I would imagine KDR's probably pretty important to TDM if you exclude those people.
Yeah. Yeah, so their final metric here, kind of like the evolution of match kills to KDR to their third one here, which is kills and then divided by deaths by enemy. So doing what you're talking about, basically excluding the self-kill stuff. But they also kind of have this, they mentioned that that is not also a great metric because of what you were saying, you know, a little bit earlier about, you know, matches that end pretty quickly. So when you talk about velocity, it is, you know, a person who has a 10-to-1 KDR, a person who has a 10-to-1 KDR who played full length of the match versus a person who played, you know, the last minute and got 10-to-1 is, you know, they are being ranked the same if you do it that way. So they have done something to kind of deal with that, which I imagine is their overly complex algorithm that feeds all of this.
Yeah, that sounds like crunchy math.
Yes, yeah. They have some, like, much more interesting stuff in here that I really appreciate, because I think when I see posts about Call of Duty and the people kind of complaining about skill-based matchmaking and how it kind of gets in the way, the thing that they bring up here is that, just like by math, you are bound to have very good and also very bad, like, win-loss streaks. And it's just literally math. And I think that that's the funny thing that people just, like, can't grok is the whole, like, you know, if you flip a coin 5 times, 3% of people will have a 5-game lose streak and 3% will have a 5-game win streak. Like, it just doesn't work the way that you think it does.
Yeah. RuneScape breaks you of that mentality pretty quick.
Yeah, that's
when you're just fair. Like, oh, no, I know this thing is 1 out of 512 and I've killed 2,000 of these damn things and I have
still
yet
didn't
to
get
see
it. Yeah.
And that's not uncommon. Like, when you're at scale of a player base, it's uncommon for that person in that particular instance, compared to the relative averages, but it is an entirely expected outcome given a population.
Yes. Yeah. So this kind of leads into the grand reveal of this, which I've already told you, because it is absurd to me that it is so obvious how important skill-based matchmaking is in this game. Yeah. So basically, the big result here is that, I guess, the first thing is, we touched on this a little bit, but Call of Duty is a, like, massive franchise. It is a massive franchise for Activision. It is, I guess, probably their number 2 game next to Candy Crush, and it's not even close. And it is, like, when you think about modern software, like, everything that you experience that isn't made by, you know, 7 people distributed across the globe, it is tested to death. Everything about your online experience, everything about your video game experience is, like, play tested, is user tested, it is A/B tested. Like, you can go and just basically flip Amazon into incognito mode or set your VPN to be on the other side of the country, and you will see not a vastly different, but you will see a different experience. So I think it's important to remember that when we talk about this game, like, it is a fun game, and it is meant to prioritize your fun, like, whatever that means, but does have incentives, and it has data behind it, and it is incessantly tested. Like, this skill-based matchmaking thing is, like, a big deal in 2019 and onward, and that is because they had an algorithm, and they have been iterating on that algorithm, testing it constantly with, like, 50% of their million plus active players since then to refine this thing to be, like, the well-honed machine that it is.
Just for, like, a quick kind of gut check, the Wikipedia list of franchises that have generated the most dollars,
Call of Duty is above Spider-Man and Batman and just below Hello Kitty and Harry Potter.
Yeah, okay. That checks out.
It's spitting distance of the MCU.
Yeah, so I think that it's like really silly to look at this, especially through the very juvenile eyes that I looked at this in 2010 when we were playing Black Ops 1 and having the whole like, oh, Treyarch, like they made their silly dumb maps, or like the dolphin dive is so cheap, or like all of this stuff. And like realizing that people make these things, and then especially as the time has gone on, that like corporations are making these things to make a shitload of money, and that money is being used to make sure that you continue to play the thing so they continue to make another shitload of money. And it's all put into testing like this. So it's not surprising to me that this data exists. The thing that is surprising to me is that they felt so strongly in their findings that they're just like, fuck it, let's publish it. Let's put it out there.
Yeah, that's a weird move. Maybe not weird, but unexpected. I guess they assume anyone else in this area already has that data themselves.
Yeah, I imagine.
To some degree. Or, yeah. I mean, I guess the other thing is maybe there's just not another property you can do a one-to-one comparison with. Like, Battlefield's the next closest, and your matchmaking there is so, wildly different. It's not even, yeah. I don't even know how you'd compare those two on the technical side when you're trying to, you know, find a really tight 6v6 game versus 100v100 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, maybe there's just, like, who's gonna use it? Like,
yeah, you might as well put it out there and yeah. Say, hey, look, we
check
published
this
thing. Yeah. Yeah. So the check this shit
our
out thing.
Our dorks say your dorks should shut the hell up.
Basically, all of these streamers should stop whining about this thing because it's actively for their benefit. I'm sorry that you cannot rack up crazy amounts of kills. So the grand revelation here, I guess, that I'm kind of building to is they've been testing this since 2019, like over and over again. Like it is not a thing that they tested once with a game and you're like, well, it didn't work, I guess we're not doing it. Like every little knob and lever of matchmaking in this game is meant to prioritize your speed to match, your, you know, engagement or staying power or, you know, time played in that match, such that you will continue to play more and then ultimately be incentivized to give them money or buy them, you know, the next game. So when skill-based matchmaking is used, 80 to 90% of players experience a better end of match performance, they stick with the game longer, and quit matches less frequently. That's the great finding. Turns out you use the thing, and it works. It works. It works really good.
It sounds like you said 80 to 90%?
Correct. Yes, 80 to 90.
Seems like most.
Yeah, most. Turns
seems
out.
Like significantly more than most. Even.
Yep, yep. And it kind of has the beautiful thing. So like part of this testing that they do is they like, you know, they take 50% of their 6 million players and say, okay, we're going to deprioritize skill-based matchmaking. Like, let's just relearn this finding. Let's see what happens. And what happens is 80 to 90 players drop off faster. And there's this really crazy bar chart that is just like basically it's just like an asymptote that is approaching the y-axis, like the negative y-axis. And then just in the 10th percentile, there's just like a little bump above the y-axis. But the bottom 9 percentiles of all skill players play the game less after 14 days, to the point where it is like literally obnoxious how much especially the second and third percentile players are not returning. They quit more often. They simply do not play the game. They don't return. And they are, you know, have the markers that, you know, Activision states indicates that a player is not enjoying the game as much as they were before. Match level quit rates, player surveys, match outcomes are all down. Or they're all up and the outcomes are down, which makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then my favorite part of all of this is that all of the people who are complaining about this, we are assuming just because of their privileged position of being semi-professional Call of Duty players, they are in that probably top 20% of all players.
And they gripe and they grouse and they complain. And the beautiful learning of all of this, which is why I'm so, so excited for them to have like open matchmaking in Black Ops 7, is that what happens is, as you play the game and you turn off the skill metrics here, people on the bottom, the bottom 90% are having a worse time. And as they have a worse time, they quit and they don't come back to the game. They quit out, they get frustrated, this isn't fun anymore, and they leave. And so now you have a diminishing player pool, and that top 10% that all of these people who are complaining about this are in has to widen out because there's less players. You lose 10% of players, and now it spreads out a little bit more. So now they're the top 20-ish, and now you've reached the part where you're not having fun anymore, and you start to become the top 30-ish, and you start to leave the game. And now what you've got is a highly diminished player pool that has a lot lower or a lot higher time to match. And then those people are getting into their match they waited a long time for, and they're all a bunch of sweats, and then they get really frustrated, and then they leave. And now your 10% over less than a few months, that top 10% has been fully distributed across the top 100%, and the player base has fallen off significantly. And so you've just simply torpedoed the video game because you thought that skill-based matchmaking was the problem, but actually you were the problem all along. And it's just beautiful. I love it.
Sounds about right. Another compounding factor there, you get better by playing people who are slightly better than you.
Yep.
And if you're already really good, and then that player pool starts to shrink, eventually you just start bumping up against people who are also really good. And then the people who are really good get even better for a little bit until the population drops slow enough that that matchmaking becomes a problem. But it I think it actually like accelerates towards the ground at a certain point.
Yes. Yeah. No, it definitely does. And then they kind of show this off next to like the several times that they have run this test, and they kind of show the back and forth that they go with the different games and kind of like what different levers they can pull. But basically, time and time again, they run this test of deprioritizing skill. Again, not turning it off. It is just simply moved down the ladder of seven other metrics that they prioritize for matchmaking. It is simply deprioritized, and it, within several months, basically kills the test population, and then they have to, like, bring it back. Which then also has, like, the interesting thing of, are all these people who are just really grumpy in a test population that they don't know about? And then they're just getting mad about that. But, you know, who knows? We're all in an A-B test, really.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I will say, as a former probably top 10% in at least like pub games. I guess I want to be like super clear about that. I did not get into the tournament scene at all or anything professional. That's an entirely different meta. Everything plays very differently when you can assume that every player in the game knows what they're doing. So I don't want to speak to that at all. But being in towards the top of the bracket in the general population is real fun stomping all of you people. That's great. I love it. I haven't had it for like 15 years. So I get why people whine. But I think my thesis with all of this, which is slightly different than yours, is that skill-based matchmaking isn't the reason that you can't pop off in Call of Duty like you used to be able to 10 years ago. Actually a huge string of other design changes that have trickled out game by game that make that significantly more difficult to do.
Yeah, I think you've dropped notes of this to me several times. Like the one that stands out to me is the the change from class-based skins to character-based skins or something that like
really bothered you. Yeah, yeah. So I'm just going to talk about how much Black Ops 1 is the best Call of Duty game. That's where this is going to go. Here. Yeah. So, okay. How much do you remember about Black Ops 1, Phil?
I mean, M16 with iron sights on firing range. I remember that you could throw a tomahawk on one side of firing range and you could usually get someone if you knew what you were doing.
Oh, you can throw a tomahawk from one side of just about any map to the other if you're clever and jump at the right time.
Oh, and the snow map. I remember the snow map. The observatory, maybe?
Array, you were talking about.
Array? Yep.
Yep. Yep, that's one of the big ones. Like, physically large.
The foul?
Do you remember the perks?
Oh yeah,
the perk system is what we're gonna start with here.
This is this the original like major perk system? Like these are the perks that they have stuck with for so long. This is where Ghost and all of that stuff, like Flak Jacket, is all from this.
They are in there. I don't think they started in Black Ops 1. Like I think some of that stuff was before, but I didn't play as many of those. Like Modern Warfare 2, Martyrdom was a thing people are still mad about.
Yes. Yeah.
So those perks existed.
Okay.
Let me pull them all up so I don't make a total fool of myself, just in case I say one of the names wrong. But the perks, you had three slots somewhere on these fandom sites.
Yeah. Someday we're going to have to build a wiki, I think.
Starting with Black Ops 1. Black the people... Ops 1. Are crying out. They need a Black Ops 1 wiki in the year of our Lord 2025.
God, the just like the mental damage I am receiving from just remembering Sleight of Hand, Marathon, Ninja, Second Chance. Like,
yeah, there we go. So you found a list. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Wow.
I am still trying to get through this. Oh, I did it. Here we go. Black Ops 1. Okay. So your first perk slot. Lightweight, Scavenger, Ghost, Flak Jacket, Hardline. Your first perk changed your player model. So that's what determined what your guy looked like running around the map. If you pick the Scavenger perk, that allows you to pick up ammo off of dead guys. You had like little extra pouches on your belt. If you had the Ghost where the spy planes can't see you, you're wearing a ghillie suit. Flak Jacket, pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
So that meant when you were playing the game, when you saw somebody, you knew at least one thing they were physically capable of.
Yeah.
You could tell that they had lightweight and they were going to run faster than you. Or they had Ghost and you knew like, oh, there's three people on the other team who have Ghost. So when I pop my spy plane, I'm not going to see those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And now, if you're running around as, I guess I'm entirely out of touch with whatever the microtransactions are now.
Yeah, Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, sure. If you're playing as Snoop Dogg, you just look like Snoop Dogg. And I just see Snoop Dogg. And I don't know anything about how fast Snoop Dogg can run or whether or not he's got a flak jacket on underneath that tracksuit. There's no way to tell. I'm just going to get kind of degenerate about how to get good at Black Ops, I think.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Go play this 13, 14-year-old game. Get good. Yeah. Logan's going to tell you how to get good.
I'm going to teach you how to get real good at it. I've been in the background. I've been working on kind of like a generalized get good strategy and a way to explain that. That's something you and I have spent.
This is a major theme of the show for like the past probably like 3 or 4 months now is this thesis of get good.
I don't think we've really talked about it on microphone ever though.
No, probably not. We've alluded to it, I think, in the Night Rain episode and stuff.
Yeah. So I played a lot of Black Ops as just without really thinking about what I was doing. And then at some point I was like, man, just looking at the hour count, I should be better than this by now. Like this is, if I'm going to keep having this hour count visible, I'm going to need the other numbers to go up.
Yeah.
Just for my own edification. So I kind of went through a path to do that. And we're going to outline that a little bit. And that will explain some of the design changes that Call of Duty has made that I think are actually the root cause of some of these issues and not necessarily just skill-based matchmaking.
Okay.
So we're gonna start with the generalized version that I kind of developed playing Magic the Gathering and PUBG and I guess Night Rain and other non-Black Ops games because I didn't... Mm-hmm. I was not this intentional at the time. But working backwards, I have found today that the framework fits remarkably well.
Amazing.
So we're going to start with a couple of maxims or axioms or tenets. I don't really pick a word.
That philosophy degree is showing.
Yeah, leave me alone. This first one's coming straight from Jean-Luc Picard. So they'll strap in. That's where we're going today. Number one here, it is possible to commit no mistakes and still lose.
Okay.
This is an important thing to internalize when you are trying to get better at something, and I think just in life in general.
Yep.
This is all three of these are actually can transfer to your day-to-day life. Is and this do a life advice
podcast now?
It's turning into one, yeah. Whether want it or not, if you're still listening, it's on you. Number two, approach everything with intentionality.
Okay.
Know why you're making the choices you're making them. If you don't, it's going to be way harder to understand if they were useful or not.
Yep.
Pretty straightforward. Number three, this one I think is maybe the most contentious, but it's going to be useful for our purposes here. You can only maximize one thing at a time.
Yeah, okay.
I'm defining maximize kind of reflexively in a way that makes that a bit of a tautology. Like, it is proving itself true in the way that I am defining those words.
Yes.
So we don't have to argue about it.
That's fine. I accept these.
Okay, cool. So the first thing we need to do is figure out what we want to maximize.
Mm-hmm.
This feels like it should be easy. In some cases, this is maybe the most difficult part because you have to be pretty specific.
Yeah, and like this is the back to even like in the matchmaking discussion, the like, well, do you want to maximize match kills? Do you want to maximize KDR? Do you want to maximize, you know, kills, but only divide by enemy deaths, etc.?
Exactly. There are layers to this and different ways you can approach it. So like, I want to get better is a totally acceptable starting goal, but it's not really an actionable goal in my mind.
No, agreed.
That's too open-ended. We need to really file it down. So like if we're looking at even just like team deathmatch, saying you want to win more games is different than saying you want your KDR to go up.
Right.
Because there are times where even in team deathmatch, having a lower KDR will win you more games.
Yeah.
So I think broadly what I try to maximize for, and this is something I do in, I learned from Magic and from speedrunning, is I wanted to maximize the number of engagements that I had per match that I was likely to win.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's how specific we want to get.
Yeah, that's very specific.
Yeah, it is very specific. And you'll see why in a little bit here. But I feel like you need to. Otherwise, like, as we talked about, if you just want to maximize your kill-death ratio, you could just cheat.
Yeah, right.
You could just cheat and do that really fast. Or you can hide in a corner and get five kills and quit.
Yeah.
And do that every time. And your kill-death ratio will go up, but you might not have any fun. And you're, like, arguably not playing the game anymore.
Right.
So I wanted to find something that would like maintain game integrity. Like, I still want to be playing the game as Richard Garfield intended.
Yes.
But I want to be doing it in a way that other people recognize I am good at this game.
Right.
Is essentially kind of where it oscillated between, I guess, either my own actualization or that through others, because leaderboards exist.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So now that we have established our target, I want to talk about skill a little bit. From my side of things, as opposed to yours. This is all stuff that I have thought about a ton, but didn't put into words until earlier this afternoon. So take it with a grain of salt. I am splitting skill into two broad categories. One of them mechanical, and the other cognitive.
Okay.
So your mechanical skill is going to be how well you do the left trigger, right trigger stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How good are you with the controller, your reaction time, those types of things.
Okay.
It's going to be the shorter list. Cognitive skill, I think, is a much longer list. That's the loadout you choose, the routes you choose to walk through the map, which parts of the map that you choose to hang out with, general strategies, your game knowledge, your knowledge of how long a player can sprint. These kinds of things are why that perk system that used to give you some information was important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can recognize those player models, I now know more about the game than someone who doesn't. And that can help bridge the gap where the mechanical skill exists already. Because once you're in a match, your mechanical skill's like not getting better. That's where it's at.
Yeah, like you're locked in or probably getting worse.
Exactly. And or even like geographically, I'm not in a great location for ping. I'm usually 60 to 80 is pretty common.
Yeah.
And frequently I'll be playing against people sometimes in single digits. That's just like a thing you can't overcome with reaction time.
Right.
At a point. And you need to find other ways to bridge that gap. Is this all track so far, at least?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm following.
Okay. So the the most, I think one of the most difficult things about like setting yourself up to sit down and actually get good at a thing that you casually interact with at the moment, is that what do you start? You're probably going to get worse.
Yes.
And potentially significantly worse for a period of time. And if you're not good at the process of getting better at a thing, you might just stay worse. Like this is like a 20-year process, I would say, that I have been on to get to a point that I can speak to this somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
Like PUBG, for instance. When I decided I wanted to start winning PUBG games, my average placement went way down. When I first started playing PUBG, I would try to live as long as possible every time.
Yeah.
Like if I could make it into the top 10, I was like, that's a good game. I'm going to try to get into the top 10, which was, you could say that's what I was maximizing for at the time, was trying to get a top 10 placement.
Yeah.
But the things that lead you to consistently placing top 10 are not the things that lead you to consistently placing first.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in PUBG, when I made that decision, I just started grinding combat. I started playing TDM a bunch, and I started dropping in the hottest locations and just getting as much interaction as possible to get better at that part of the game. With Black Ops, I started playing team hardcore capture the flag to get better at the standard game. So hardcore, you typically die in 1 to 2 shots, and you have no minimap, and there are no player indicators.
Oh.
So, yeah. So it's... That's the other reason you had to be able to recognize player models, and this was a good way to train yourself to recognize player models, because you had to be able to distinguish teams from each other visually, because that was the only indication as what the player model was on what team that person was on. And if you only take 2 bullets to kill, whoever...
You better be right.
Yes. Yeah. Because the thing I forgot to mention is hardcore also has team damage enabled, so you can kill your teammates by accident. And everyone looks the same if you're not really paying attention. So it's not uncommon to do that.
Yep.
If you get 3 team kills in a game, you get booted. It just kicks you out of the match. So I basically put myself in a position where I had to get better at certain aspects of the game in order to not be dead all of the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And over time, you start to build out those cognitive skills. And that's where I think the testing really comes into play. So in a game like Black Ops, the maps are pretty flat. There's not a ton of verticality. A couple of them have split levels, a couple of them have hills, but nothing like what you see in a modern game.
No. There's like a second story balcony in like a Blops 1 map compared to like some of the crazy terrain stuff going on in the latest stuff.
Yeah. And at some point, roughly when I stopped playing consistently, I feel like You see a lot of map design early on that feels like it was inspired by, I'm sure it was inspired by your Quakes, your Dooms, your whatnot. Like the people building those games grew up playing Quake and Doom online. And you see maps that are being designed for specifically to force interaction at different locations for gameplay reasons, where now maps to me feel like they're typically designed to accurately replicate a physical space, and they may adjust that physical space to try to encourage movement in one direction or another, but they're very interested with the office building looking like an office building and being laid out like an office building in a way where if you go look at some of the buildings in like a Black Ops, you're like, this house makes no damn sense. No one would build a house with rooms like this. This is dumb as hell. Where now you go look at those things, you're like, oh yeah, I've been in this office building before. And I think that has, that has a huge impact. And that design change cuts out a lot of the cognitive factors that I attribute to skill. So the way I played Black Ops, once I kind of went through this process of getting better at it and testing a bunch of equipment and seeing what worked for me and what worked against the metagame, I focused on having more knowledge of the situation than any of my opponents. So my entire build was around, ideally, me shooting you from the side or from the back, because I'm more likely to win then. And that's going to bridge that mechanical skill gap. And it's going to bridge the gap of ping. You're going to get an extra half a second if you're shooting from someone perpendicular than if you're head on with them. So I focused on like Ghost to not show up on spy planes, so your enemies don't know where you are. I would bring a motion sensor. I would run kill streaks that
give me data on where other players are. So I would have a good idea of where my opponents were, and they wouldn't know where I was. That's kind of the idea.
Yeah.
Eventually, you play enough of the game, and you get familiar enough with the way the spawns work on these maps, you can start to get a pretty darn good idea where all of the enemies are likely to be on the map just by looking at where your teammates are.
Oh, interesting. Like, yeah. Just knowing where the... like the leash on spawns are, like when it flips, yes. And when they are condensed or not.
Yep. And spawns back then were very much designed with team A on one side, team B on the other side.
Right.
Three lanes connect the two with a perpendicular channel going across them. That's kind of your base map layout. And then there'll be a lot of variation on that, but that's kind of your template. And you can see that, we could pull up Call of Duty maps and I can... Oh, I did draw this on one of them earlier, actually, because I knew I was going to talk about this. I'll just send you one. I drew this while we were talking about Leprous or something. Here's launch. Blue is one main spawn. Red is the other main spawn. The yellow is your three lanes.
Do I know launch? I know launch, right?
Launch is the one with the big rocket ship that takes off halfway through and the whole fucking screen shakes.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're gonna use launch here to kind of talk about like gear and perk selection. And because the spawns primarily are side one, side two, side A, side B, however you want to divvy that up. Yeah, eventually you get an idea of how far forward you can push before the spawns flip. You'll know roughly where action tends to happen. So the other through line I noticed looking at PUBG and Black Ops is both of those games leveraged a lot of stats to the player. You could go into a Black Ops game after the match and rewatch the entire match from anyone's perspective or from a free floating camera.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Crazy valuable if you're trying to get better at something. That means that, like, you die in a weird way from a sight line you didn't know exist. You can go back into that match, load that up, see where that person is, find that sight line. Now you can adjust your own play based around that sight line. You can also just watch that whole match from that person's perspective and see what else they're doing.
See what else they're doing. About. Yeah.
Yep. The sight lines are huge. Like the way you path through the map, the sight lines you're expected to hit, an understanding of a heat map. You used to get a heat map with every match, and that would aggregate over time. So you would see where the common hot zones were in a map. And once you understand all of those things, then you start to change the way you move through the map based on the equipment that you're bringing in. So I'll approach a corner differently if I have a submachine gun or if I have an AR or a DMR. If you have a submachine gun, you want to be pretty close to your enemy. So you're going to walk up around that corner and be pretty close to the corner when you round it, because you're more likely to be closer to them. Your higher rate of fire is going to benefit you. You're more likely to win an engagement against an unknown individual at that distance. But if you have an assault rifle or a sniper, you're much better off being further away. So now you might take that corner wide from pretty far back to take advantage of your extended range. So you start to layer your knowledge of the heat map with your knowledge of these sight lines, and then you can use that to inform your gear choices, which then informs the way you physically move throughout the map and which parts of the map you go to.
That's fascinating. So when do you put this together, right? Like, is this aggregated over like months, or is this something that just from all of this input, you're just like constantly testing things?
So it depends on the game and it depends on how familiar you are with the genre.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm trying to crack a new Call of Duty, it doesn't take me super long anymore. A weekend or two, maybe.
Okay.
Before I find, like, I'm not going to say I find like the best play style, but I find a very good play style for the way I like to play.
Yeah.
After a week or two. Black Ops 1 took me a while. So The other nice thing with Black Ops 1, and this is, I guess, this is an issue with the newer ones, I'm just going to call it an issue, is Black Ops 1, everything had a counter, and it typically had like one counter or a category of counters. So if there's a spy plane up, you can shoot it down with a rocket, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If someone calls in a Blackbird, you could have a counter spy plane, but then someone could shoot down the counter spy plane. If someone has an attack helicopter that comes in and targets players randomly, you can bring Ghost Pro as your perk, and then the helicopter will no longer target you.
Mm-hmm.
There's all of these plays and counterplays that you're making. So the more of those exist, the more difficult testing is going to be, and the more of a baseline understanding of the established meta, you're going to need to do things quickly.
Yeah.
Same thing with, I got way into Rainbow Six Siege when it came out. Loved that game when it came out. Ugh. So my favorite, like, interplay of these exact kind of strategies, where you have one attacking team, one defending team. It's like a hero shooter, so everyone has these individualized abilities. And when the game launched, there was only one hero per ability. So did you play Siege? I do not remember.
No, I never did.
Okay. So Siege, yeah, like fully destructible, very small environments, objective-based missions, really quick time to kill. Like, you go down in a hurry. It's like a hardcore match.
Okay.
And like, the defending team can deploy defenses during the prep phase. So each person on defense, I'm sure this has all changed. Forgot to preface that Siege is an entirely different game than when I played it when it launched 20 years ago or whatever now.
Yeah.
When it launched, each defending team person had a handful of metal reinforcements they could put up on walls. So by default, you could just shoot through, like, I've lost the word, drywall. Like, just a standard house wall. You could shoot through that. There was a character with a sledgehammer who could just knock a hole through it. You could hit it with an impact grenade and blow a hole through it. And suddenly you have, like, a new navigational route between two rooms that didn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. Or you shot a guy who was laying prone in a corner through the wall because you saw him laying there.
Yep.
So the defending team has these big steel reinforcements that they could put up that would block off of like a 6-foot sectional wall. So they could all work together and like reinforce one room in such a way that the only way to get into that room is now through the door.
Yep.
But one of the attackers, his name's Thermite. He has Thermite. He can place his Thermite on those reinforced walls and still blow them open.
Melt it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but since he's the only one, that means if you're on defense and you pop out early and you kill the enemy's Thermite, you now know no one can get through those steel walls the rest of the game.
Yep.
Because that one piece has been countered. Those are the types of interplays that I think are really fascinating and they've entirely gotten away from. The game now, between the map design changes, the character class changes, the information that's communicated to the people who are willing to seek it out and abuse it like I am... all of that stuff has changed in such a way that like my playstyle does not exist anymore. That kind of map control that I used to do, where you are taking in a bunch of information and manipulating either the spawns or placing yourself into positions that are highly defensible and also provide perpendicular lines of fire to high traffic zones on the heat map. Those things don't exist anymore. There aren't rooms that have like one entrance in a Call of Duty map anymore, or even two entrances. It's going to have two or three doors. It's going to have a window, and there's going to be some amount of verticality that you can hit from some other angle. Where every one of those Black Ops 1 maps, one or two people who really knew what they were doing could lock down a map pretty consistently.
Yeah. And so like your play style of being able to account for all of that stuff and be prepared for it is just no longer viable because there's too many data points to kind of deal
exactly. with. Exactly. And on top of that, they've started adding, like Black Ops 4, I think it was, added hero characters. So you picked like a dude with an ability in that game.
Yeah.
And those abilities were all one-hit kill bullshit. Like, one of the guys could jump over a wall and slam a gravity hammer on the ground, and it would just KO everyone within like 10 feet. You could literally jump over a wall in a way that no one else in the game could do at the time. But when this person popped their ultimate, they got some air. So like, you can't play around that the way that you can play around an attack helicopter, or the way that you can play around someone on the other team who's got a rapid fire submachine gun that they're very good with. And so now you have to pick longer engagement distances. Like, there are ways to play around those things. They've added so much one-off bullshit that the average or below average player can still execute that is going to stop the kill streak of someone with my playstyle. Because there's just too many of those little one-offs that kill you in one hit to play around anymore. And I think those changes are what actually matter. Perhaps more than the skill-based matchmaking stuff does.
Interesting. I mean, I think I'm there with you. I think that the thing with all of this skill-based matchmaking nonsense is that it is coming from the point of view of an already top-tier elite player who simply wants to go buck wild on all the noobs and rack up their kill count, which is fine. Like, I can understand the excitement and fun of that. But I do... the thing that gets me about it, I guess, is that that is not a skill acquisition endeavor. Like, they are not doing that to get better at the game. And no. I much rather prefer the, like, skill-based thing where everyone is of sufficient skill to one another, and this is a great crucible where we learn who is actually better at this and who can kind of grow and evolve and use all of this input to have, like, a better outcome from everything that they're taking in.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's for me at least, that has been a much healthier long-term mindset. Because what happens when you get really good is you start to set a standard for yourself that is not sustainable. So, like, it would get to the point where on a week's worth of game time, if I was under like a 6 or a 7 to 1 KDR, I was pretty upset about it.
Yeah.
And like actually upset. Like, it would have a negative impact.
Emotionally.
Yes. Emotionally invested in that number being larger than it was.
Yeah.
Which is not a cool or chill place to be long term.
No.
And if you are just focused on getting better, so the tough part about getting focused on just being better at the game is you have to learn how to establish those metrics yourself,
right?
And measure them accurately and measure them honestly, and that's fucking hard.
Yeah.
And I didn't get good at that, if I even am good at it, until I started grinding like MTG drafts. That's when I really had to learn how to like get rid of some of those cognitive biases, and learn how to quantize a game. Like, how do you determine what levers exist for you to pull, and then how to go about solving it from there. But yeah, like that ties into mantra number one here, that it's possible to commit no mistakes and still lose.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just because you lost doesn't mean you did it wrong necessarily.
Yeah.
Or vice versa is the other thing. It's just because you won doesn't mean you're doing it correctly either.
Yes.
And when you don't have skill-based matchmaking, if you do get better, your numbers will go up. Some numbers somewhere will go up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the argument against in the other direction is that without skill-based matchmaking, your numbers don't go up. So then you can't tell you're getting better because you're jumping in brackets instead of moving arbitrary metrics around.
Yeah, there is a certain amount of that is just, you know, honey, it's okay, you're a 6, you know, like
yeah, like, yeah,
you may also never get better than this, like this is where you're at now.
That's the other thing too, is you'll hit a functional ceiling at some point. But yeah, when I hear like, oh, we need to get rid of skill-based matchmaking so people know can get better, that's someone who's not thought deeply about how to improve at things.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it's just that we haven't said it yet. This is the real, like, social Darwinism bullshit of all of this, of, like, let the market decide. Like, let there be no guardrails, and therefore survival of the fittest will occur.
I mean, it's a fucking game, so we've already established a bunch of arbitrary guardrails.
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing is an exercise in arbitrary futility. So, yes.
What's one more?
Yeah, like, yeah. Be deliberate about it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I mean, I guess I will say, like, it's fun seeing that number real big, though. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm not as happy looking at, like, my 1.6 KD as I was, you know, looking at my 93-2 or something that I'd pull off occasionally.
Yeah, I mean, that is, like, truly my... I mean, I still... We all have our moments in Call of Duty. I still remember that one night that I was waiting for you guys to log on, and I was on the like, shipment 24/7 thing, and I just had an absolute monster run with the Signal sniper rifle to grind out that camo, and it was a blasty blast, just, like, running shop on this little tiny map with a big old sniper rifle, but... It never happened again, you know?
Yeah, that's because that map is designed for random bullshit.
Yeah.
And, like, all of the design changes that I'm talking about were made specifically so you are able to kill me.
Yes. Yeah.
And 100%. Not even often, but you're able to kill me like 1 out of 6 times instead of 1 out of 22 times. And yes, that means I'm not hitting these monster kill streaks constantly.
Yeah, except on shipment when it is chaos bullshit.
Because like that's the real, the dirty secret about Call of Duty KDR is it really is like, how effectively can you manage your kill streaks?
Yeah, yeah. Like once you get them, when do you do it and how do you manage it?
Yeah, like the difference between going 5-1 in gunplay and going like 7-1 in gunplay actually means your KD goes from like 5-1 to like 15-1 or 12-1.
Yeah.
Because you're going to pick up a bunch of extra kills off of those higher end kill strengths once you get to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Chopper Gunner was by far, I looked at stats today.
A monster of a kill streak.
I had averaged more kills with Chopper Gunner than I did with Dogs, even though Dogs is ostensibly the better or more difficult to obtain.
It's wild that they gave you that much data in that game.
Oh, it's still accessible. I had at the end, I was 40,596 kills, 17,995 deaths with the Galil specifically, which was my primary AR once I got good.
Yeah.
I had like 8,000 kills with the FAMAS when I was bad. 104,000 kills overall. So I played a lot of Black Ops.
You played a lot of Black Ops.
Played a lot of Black Ops. So yeah, I don't know. I guess my thesis is, yeah, there were a number of other design changes that have impacted that one-man army style gameplay as much or more than skill-based matchmaking, and I don't think we address that very often. Or maybe people have been for years. I don't partake in a lot of Call of Duty discourse anymore.
Yeah, it's probably for the best for both of us.
Yeah.
I guess to make this conversation a giant circle, like if your first Call of Duty is after all of that stuff you just talked about, like you don't even know, like knowing that there is like a giant corpus of data out there that is just like, here are the heat maps on this. Here's an entire like game video that you can go back and like analyze the tape. You can do all of this stuff. Like, I don't think that's a new Call of Duty. Like, I don't even think there's a secondary plugin that you can get to do that.
Yeah, no, they don't even surface your KDR on the leaderboard at most, depending on the game mode anymore. Like, all of that data stuff is gone from the user side.
Yeah.
Which, again, I think it helps keep that skill ceiling lower in that, like, not at the top, but in that upper quartile where I would sit. Because once you hit the pro level, like the metagame shifts, everything's different. All those people are training mechanical skills constantly because it's worth it to do that for them. Like it's an entirely different animal. Like you bring different gear. Like everything is different.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about like that upper quartile, I think game knowledge makes a huge impact, and they have dramatically limited the game knowledge that is easily accessible to the player, where they used to either charge you for it or shove it down your throat. And then on top of that, the other mechanical changes that make it easier for a lower skilled player to get a cheap shot in, essentially, for lack of a better term. I'll let my sweat bias show through there.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. All you scrubs have ruined my Call of Duty by making it a better game holistically for all you scrubs.
Yeah, it feels like we've just circled back, and hang on, let me check and see who's making the new one right now. Black Ops 7. Oh, look at that.
That's Treyarch.
Treyarch.
One other thing we didn't mention is they've been making Call of Duty games for like fucking 15 years now, and people are just goddamn good at Call of Duty.
22 years. It's 22.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
yeah, people just got good at it.
Yeah. Like, people are just way better with a controller, broadly speaking, better at dual analog stuff, and specifically better at Call of Duty. It's just, that's what happens when a thing exists for a while. That's why, like, you can look at NBA stats or any sport. Like, people get better at things over time.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. That's my rambly version. I suppose if there is interest in a more cohesive overview, we could do that at some point. Or if people want to maybe
dive into a more generalized method or a different game. We could look at different ways to get good at stuff, because I think it's an interesting topic.
Yeah, I like the method. That all very much resonates with stuff that I have seen.
Yeah, we can definitely go deeper on that, and like how you quantize, I think, is a really important one. How you choose which levers to pull, and then how you measure those.
Yes. Yeah. But how you choose, and then I would be curious to hear more about this as a person who listens to you 3 hours at a time. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a good topic. we've certainly talked about it a lot.
We've played a lot of shooters together too, and I don't think we've ever really talked about it.
No.
In terms of,
it's not always been cozy games and games that make me cry. I also was a bad Call of Duty sweat at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Not maybe not a sweat. I wasn't that crazy into it. I was there for the friends and the cookie cake.
I will say one downside is once you start to play games with this framework, it becomes difficult to step away from it. So you are there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I struggle with continuing to at least pretend to be a sane person when we play games.
Yes.
And to be a teammate that is at least fun to be around and not just a directing a raging asshole the entire time.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to think I strike an acceptable balance at this point.
You do.
But I had to find a new thing to maximize for. I can't maximize for some type of internal gameplay efficiency when we're all playing.
Right.
Because I'm usually trying to do stuff that we're not trying to do as a group.
Yeah, so we're fucking good, boat anchors. I'll
it's not
up.
A good yeah, yeah. Shout out to Nick, by the way. He's gotten way better at first person shooters over the last handful of years. By our end with PUBG, there were games he carried me through on PUBG for sure. Straight up, there were wins that we had, first place wins that he carried us to.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. We just don't talk about the Hunt Showdown era.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was all me.
That was bad. That was all you. But
yeah, I went deep on that, and I was 1v3. That's exclusively a multiplayer game, and I would go it solo on.
Yep.
But yeah, so I had to learn how to maximize for something else, because that's the way I tackle these problems.
Mm-hmm.
So now I typically try to maximize the likelihood that we'll get a clip worth recording is kind of how I think about it.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah, that's interesting.
Because that requires an amount of game knowledge and an amount of skill, but not isn't predicated on the outcome of a scoreboard.
Right.
And typically leads us to just a more fun play experience. Because I think maximizing for fun is really nebulous and hard for my brain to understand. So I need to find something a little more concrete as a metric. And that's kind of what I've landed on.
No, I like that. I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's always been the struggle with us playing too, is that we also are maximizing for fun, but that also means that the negative version of that, right, is that, you know, we will have those nights where we were playing Modern Warfare 2 and it was not going our way. And there's just no avenue for finding fun if you're losing. When you're that nebulous, there's nothing you can really do to be okay, well, this isn't working out. And I guess that's it.
Yeah, we define fun differently.
Yes, yes.
Because I can be losing and still having fun, but not long term. There were people who I'd come across in Black Ops that would have double my playtime and a third of my KD. And I'm like, I don't understand. I don't understand how you've played this game for 100 days and you are in the bottom third.
Yeah.
I would stop coming back at some point.
Yeah.
I don't have that constitution, but some people clearly do.
Maybe they just got a you know, they're playing the me role.
That could be.
And then they have their friend who's really good at this game. They just hang out.
Yeah.
Vibes-based Call of Duty.
There's your other life lesson, I guess, out of this episode is if you're playing with other people, make sure you are maximizing for things in a way that prioritizes everyone's enjoyment, not just your own.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's a lesson that we all should really internalize.
Yeah. That'll lead us into our Magic the Gathering talk next time we do one of these.
Soon. All right, bye. We don't have to end the show, remember?
Cool. Bye.
Bye. And hey, thanks for listening. I've been Phil and he's been Logan. Our music is by Nicholas Cahill. Head over to 70%complete.com for articles, blogs, and reviews. And you can also watch our video essays and Let's Plays on YouTube. or, you know, tune in mostly daily for my short chat podcast, Point to Point. There's also a link to join our Discord down there. Come hang out and chat RuneScape, tech, or, you know, really anything else with all the great people there. All the links are in the show notes. And we'll be back soon with another episode of Esoteric Nonsense. See you then.
I still haven't set up that fucking vocal processor yet.
The vocal processor. Tell me more about your vocal processor. What is this?
I bought a thing.
Did we talk about this?
Oh, maybe I talked to Nick. I did talk. I have the DBX286S.
All right.
Sitting over here.
DBX. What is it?
286S, as in Sierra.
We talked about this.
Okay.
This is in my history.
Okay, good. It's mostly trying to figure out how I'm going to power everything. Now that I have the networking stuff split off into the other circuit, I think I have room to add this.
This was the thing that you were talking about mounting under your desk.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to be able to do that because I forgot that this is an IKEA desk, even though it is a sturdy IKEA desk.
I can send you a desk.
I'm a little concerned with screwing into it because it's probably not solid.
No, that's definitely true. It's not. It's got that honeycomb shit in it.
Yeah, so I'll either have to like run a bolt through the whole thing or clamp it. Or something. I don't know. It might just sit on my desktop. We'll see.
Well, let's click into here.
I have a like a 6U rack in addition to the like the 48U rack that I have. But I already have that 6U rack that's full of. I mean, I want to bring the big one down here, but that's an eventual thing. But I could use that little one and throw a power conditioner in it. And then the router I have is rack mountable. So
there you go.
Just put everything that I have that's rack mountable together.
Yes.
And run some more XLR cables like through the ceiling or something.
Yeah. I have like one spare wall over here. It's not like a whole wall, but it's definitely a place where a piece of art could go or a piece of networking art could go.
I would say, a couple access points.
Yeah,
now that you saw the networking wall.
Yeah, I think there's just part of me that's like, man, it would be nice to have like a really lightweight, like half rack that's just right there where I can.
Yeah.
I just want to slot stuff in. Like, I want to slot stuff in and get a good ka-chunk out of it.
Uh huh. You should get something with hot swappable drive bays.
That's what I want.
It's a good. Yeah.
Yeah. This is true. Back to the conversation earlier about what they took from us. Like that, that was the benefit of something like a floppy disk or a zip disk. Like the like ka-chunk eject button, I miss it so much. Like if USB worked that way, where like I could have a USB, like a USB-A, just plug a flash drive in, but right next to it, like a little red button popped up every time I plugged it in there and I had to push it and it would eject it out.
Push it out, like physically push it out.
That'd be so fucking good.
We could probably build that.
Just shoot it right out. Yeah, you could probably do it.
That wouldn't be.
But I want that. Yes, I would love.
I know exactly
that.
The thing you want. Yeah.
But the problem is that it's not that I want it. I do want it. And I could make that happen for me. But I think that everyone deserves it. Like you should be able to hit that button and pop it out. And everyone should know that. That joy that they're missing out on, that they don't have the pop it out button anymore.
Yeah, I feel like that's up there with hanging up a phone by giving it a good slam.
Yeah,
and that is a lost experience at this point.
Yeah,
there's an entire two generations of humans who do not know the satisfaction of a good fuck you hang up.
Yeah, you hang it up so much that the physical ringer rings back at you. Ugh.
Yeah. You gotta really kind of shoot the gap there, though, because if you hang it up too hard, it doesn't actually hang up, and you just put the phone onto the ground, and then you feel like a real asshole, because now you gotta pick it up, and they heard you fuck that up.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing. Yeah. So there's, you know, there's a give and take. There's a strategy to it.
Sure. But
speaking of things that have strategies.
Oh, there he goes with the impossible pivot.